Hi, I'm Bonnie. Welcome to the sixth season of this podcast, Make Joy Normal. With my co-hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, and our guests, we hope to support you while you seek joy in your daily walk. Please review, like, or share this podcast if it's helped you to make joy normal in your own life. How was your Christmas and New Year's?
It was really good. It was really good. We went to a Catholic retreat center about an hour away with 11 other families that we didn't know beforehand, right. But we knew the people who were putting on the retreat, and it was really lovely. It was nice. They had a priest there who like went hiking with us, and there was just lots of like family bonding downtime and a very appropriate New Year's Eve party, you know, with like ringing.
Love that. Like,
dropping the ball or whatever at 10 o'clock instead of midnight, and family dancing and that kind of stuff. So it was fun.
It was really fun. I just thought I would start with a little prayer here. In the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Heavenly Father, just thank you so much for this conversation with Jenna. I am so grateful that she would like to talk about this and her own experience with transformation and seeing things with new eyes. We just ask that you bless all our conversation, that you use this conversation to be conduit for your greater good and for the love and edification of those who are listening to it. We just ask for the intercession of our Mother of Good Counsel. Pray for us. St. Philip Neri, pray for us. And St. Thomas Aquinas, pray for us. So thank you so much for coming back. This is great. So I'm going to give a little bit of context. I have with me Jenna Bow today, who is a mom I interviewed a few months ago. She's a food blogger and a recent Catholic convert. During the course of our conversation, which was primarily about food and family and faith, during the course of our conversation, we got onto the topic, kind of got sidelined a little bit, onto the topic of kind of attachment parenting, co-sleeping, that sort of lump of topics. We ultimately decided we should really get together again and talk about this transformation that you've experienced really since becoming Catholic. So welcome, Jen. I'm so glad you're back.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me again, Bonnie.
This is great. This is a great topic. And I'll tell you something. This is kind of a, I don't know, maybe a little known fact about me. People know everything about me because I'm just sort of such an open book, right? But when I first became Christian, was also around the time that attachment parenting was really ramping up, the understanding of it and the sort of my eyes opening about it at that time. And so I went that direction in terms of my sort of couple, mom-to-mom kind of evangelization that I was doing at the time was really about breastfeeding and the nature of breastfeeding, the natural relationship of attachment. Kind of what was going on in my life was really how I was evangelizing others. And I really thought, okay, this is how God wants to use me. I became a Laici League leader at the time, and I started sort of professing this ideology to you know, everyone who would listen, right? I was sure that was God was forming me to do that, because it was so sort of in the context of family life. It was something I was doing with my children, not away from my children. And I think that that's a really important idea when we talk about evangelization as moms, that I feel really strongly that it shouldn't be taking us away from our family, that it should be something we do as a family, right? Because this is the vocation we've chosen, and that's the most important part of it. So I was so sure that this is where God was leading me, and it just sort of never gained a lot of traction. But homeschooling, in terms of like, I was being asked to give talks on homeschooling and how do you do it? And so I ended up really has been my wheelhouse for a long time now, probably, I don't know, 25 years, has been talking about homeschooling and relationships and all of that. But interestingly, since I started my podcast, I probably get, because I wear my heart on my sleeve, I talk about my life and my lifestyle and my opinions about things, that I get almost as many questions about attachment parenting, co-sleeping, breastfeeding, as I do about homeschooling. And it's like, okay, God, we sort of took the long journey to what I felt was the most important, the most foundational aspect of parenting. Yeah. But I guess he knew my homeschooling voice was maybe going to be more accessible to the masses than this was. And he was going to bring that idea back anyway. And it's, it, you know, the mystery of readiness, right? When maybe the culture was more ready, when I was more ready, when it was more natural, I wasn't sort of preaching it. It was just a natural outcropping of the life that we've lived, right? So, so anyway, I'm just so grateful for when this topic comes up, because it's really where my heart was all these years, right?
That's so cool. Yeah. That's so cool. I mean, it's really kind of like the foundation of everything, I feel like.
So I was hoping that you would sort of maybe chat a little bit about your particular epiphany that's happened since you've had your fourth child. So you had three sons. How old are your sons again?
My sons are 9, 7, and 5.
Okay. Yeah. And you have a little girl now?
8 months. Yeah.
Okay. Lucy, right?
Yeah, Lucy. Yeah, you have a Lucy too, so you know.
Yes.
32.
I think. I should know this. How did that kind of happen for you? You started sort of thinking different thoughts, and why was that? So where were you at, first of all, and how did the epiphany happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I kind of have to back up and say that for my first three children, we're from California, and we ran in a circle of, we went to a non-denominational church, and my friends were kind of across the board. I had non-denominational Christian friends and also non-believer friends, you know, just a good variety of friends. And everybody kind of, we all were having babies at the same time. And I never knew of a different way than what I did. And I don't think I like damaged my kids, but I wouldn't do what I did again. I got them on a schedule very early because that's what everybody did. Those are the books that were handed around my group of friends circle. And it was just kind of, that's what you did. I mean, it sounds silly now that I never knew that there was a different way to do things to mother.
Right.
I think that my doula for my, she was my doula for my three children in California, because I had a home birth and non-medicated births. And she actually was the only one who, when I was having trouble, like getting one of my children to sleep, she kind of like was like, well, you know what? You could just sleep with the baby. And I had never heard of such a thing. And I kind of dismissed her like as being like so crunchy, so crazy. Like, who would do that? I'd never heard of that. And I would certainly never do that because they would be in the bed with me forever, or I would accidentally roll on them. Like, I thought that was crazy. I loved her.
Right.
But I was like, that's wild, because no one else I know in my peer circle is doing that.
She just crossed some sort of philosophical line.
And I was like, wow, like what? That's crazy. And I think at one point I had mastitis, and she was like, just bring the baby into your bed. And I was, and nurse. And I was like, what? But what about the schedule? And I think that I've always been very, very type A. And so that sort of just fit with my life. I struggled with anxiety, and I just wanted to know for sure that my kids were going to, like, you know, be on a regimented schedule and sleep through the night and all the things.
And predictable, you know, as kids are.
I had
easy to manage
the system and had it all figured out. And so did everybody that I ran with. I mean, we all did the same thing. And that was just kind of like my type A-ness, I think. But let it be known, and I will say this, that I never actually made any of my kids cry it out. They just naturally slept really good. And I kept doing what books say of like pushing the feeding time back like 5 minutes and 5 minutes. And then you go in and soothe, and then you come back and then soothe 5 minutes later. But I never like, I would have never let my babies actually like scream or anything like that. So that never happened. Right. I will say that I just had easy sleepers. Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, 5 years goes past since my, my son and my daughter are 5 years apart, and we thought that we were done having babies. We sold, we moved from California to the East Coast, and we sold and gave away everything. Because again, in the circles that we ran with, the non-denominational Christians, you were done, two or three kids, and then, you know, no more kids.
Right.
Like everything is scheduled.
So openness to life was.
Yes, there was no real openness to life. And that was also considered normal. And I never had heard anything else. Never. And so when I became a Catholic, I had actually, before becoming Catholic, I felt like God was telling me that we need to be more open to life, and that like, just kind of see what would happen. And, you know, So I felt like that nudging, but that was kind of back to the back burner of all the other voices of my friends at the time, who are still the non-denominational ones, who were getting, their husbands were getting the vasectomies. They were like, you know, two kids, you're done. After two kids, you go and you serve the church. That's what you do. Like, and that was very, very, very normal. So, but I had this feeling in my head that maybe that this, like, we could do something different. And so around.
Okay. So I hope you don't mind me asking this question. So because you already sort of were experiencing some nudging about openness to life and maybe giving fertility to God as, you know, as a Christian, was that a hurdle then when you were coming into the church? Did you have to, was that a big thing to get past, or did it feel like, oh, this is cool, they support this idea?
Well, when we came into the church, I already had
See. Okay.
So this was before, this is when I first started thinking, oh, maybe like, let me explore Catholicism. Right. So I had those two thoughts at the same time. And at that exact same time in my life, I had a very, very unexpected miscarriage out of nowhere. This was completely unexpected. Right. Did not think, I still am like, how did I even get pregnant? Like, it was just completely unexpected. But that miscarriage woke me up to maybe like, God does want us to be open to life. Cause at that time we weren't really open to life, and I still got pregnant and had a miscarriage. And so I felt like God was really trying to shake me up there. And then of course, like, you know, the miscarriage, and you're like, well, I thought like this was supposed to be, and I'm like exploring Catholicism, but now I have a miscarriage. And it just felt, I was felt very confused by it. And by that time we were, you know, we were doing RCIA, and I had kind of talked my husband into like, let's like just be totally open to this, because we were both really excited when we found out that I was pregnant, even though it was very, very shocking. But then I couldn't get pregnant again, which was very strange for me because I've always gotten pregnant on the first try. So like, to back up, like, very type A, gets pregnant on the first try always. Like, everything was just always felt very like easy and scheduled for me. And so now I'm becoming a Catholic and I can't get pregnant and I want to get pregnant. And so it definitely, it took a few months, and then, you know, I got pregnant again after doing a 33-day Marian consecration. I found out I was pregnant on the last day of that.
No way.
And, yeah. And there was just so many interesting little signs, and then it turned, you know, it was a girl, and it was just like, I don't know, from the get-go, everything felt really different. And by that time, we had fully entered the church, and I was finding people, peers, who also had babies who were my age, because I'm going to be 40, and they also had babies and they were in their late 30s. This wasn't like all the friends I had, they kind of cut it off. They turned like 32, have two kids, we're done. And so I was finding older moms in the church. And that was so fascinating to me. And these older moms had a whole slew of kids, and they just seemed so calm, but they didn't have like the schedule that I was really used to. Their kids were very well behaved, but they just seemed more relaxed about the whole thing. And I was like, that is so interesting. That is what I want. I don't know. I still think that that's just a really interesting thing. The older moms, which I could relate to, and then they didn't have a schedule, and they just like, they were out living their lives, and they didn't, you know, stare at their watches and say, oh, like, we've got to go.
Now, a lot of these homeschool moms, is that like, you were already homeschooling in California, right?
Yeah. Okay. We have always homeschooled, and everybody I really know out here homeschools. So,
That's awesome.
So I thought that that was really interesting. And then it just kind of so happened that my daughter is nothing like my son's. She did not take to any sort of real schedule, and from day one, really wouldn't sleep without me.
Right.
And I can't make her not. And so we're happily co-sleeping. And for the most part, it's really, really great.
That's awesome. It's an interesting transition, isn't it? When you sort of, I don't know, release, I guess it's a release.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
And I remember that happened, like with my first daughter. I hadn't even heard of co-sleeping. I didn't even know people did that and all of that. And then I couldn't even have her in the same room with me for the first little while. Like I just, you know, I mean, I was really careful about responding to her needs. I just couldn't sleep with her in the same room. I thought I could. And then my second came along and it was during sort of her babyhood that I mean, she was in a crib in a room next to ours. And every time she woke up, I would bring her into bed with me and then fall asleep. And then like, okay, put her back into bed. And it's just so dumb after a while, right? But it was like, I still was sort of in this mindset that, you know, okay, I don't think this is right. But I don't really know anybody. I don't know anybody else who's doing this sort of thing. And it's kind of a weird place to be because you kind of feel like, okay, it's right, but doesn't. But who do I turn to, right? We don't have our aunts and our, mummies and sisters-in-law and whatever. What do we do? And so that was kind of similar for me. And then we ended up, when I got pregnant, those two, the second and third, are quite close together. When I got pregnant and she was whatever, 18 months old, my husband would sleep in their room, right? The two girls that I had, she would sleep in their room. But at that point, when the third was born, I started reading some studies and various other things about SIDS and all kinds of other things. And I could not have not slept with that child for anything. Like at that point at which that I kind of around the time I got pregnant with her, I just became really convicted. And I thought I wouldn't sleep if she was in another room now. Right. It kind of did this total flip flop. And then you start sort of finding your people, right. You realize that there's people out there doing this. So how would you say it benefited your, how would you say it's benefiting you and your daughter at this moment in time? And how does it feel?
Well, I would say it's completely changed me. And I think that that's God also just stripping away layers of pride that I've had for so long on, I have to be type A, I have to have everything perfect, I have to, like, you know, have everything just so. And since especially entering the church, I've really felt like God has really started to strip that away, especially with this. It's benefited me so much because I just, again, I feel like it's God just like stripping away layers of pride, and we sleep so well. We really, really do sleep well. I found when I was coming into this, I've always had the babies in my bed until they were 12 weeks old, and then I would move them into their crib. And I did that with all three kids.
So it wasn't it wasn't completely foreign. It just had an expiry date.
No. They were in like a little thing. They were in little like sleeper thing, not like free. That felt really wild. And so when the time came with Lucy, I couldn't move her out because she wouldn't last. She would be up every 20 minutes if she wasn't next to me. And so I started like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? And I started asking friends from church who had large families, how they get their babies to sleep. I asked in my book club. I'm part of a Catholic women's book club and also my church. And every single one said they just sleep with their babies. And so I was like, wow, there must be something to this. And at the same time, I read two books, or actually three books, which really kind of solidified everything for me. And that's the La Leche League, Sweet Sleep.
Okay.
Maybe we can put this in the show notes or something. I think these books are fantastic. The book by the La Leche League, so great and very validating about how a mother just naturally feels like she should sleep next to her baby. And also any of the books by James McKenna, who ran the Sleep
Lab. I've heard wonderful things about his book. I've not read the books, not read them yet. Yeah.
Oh my God. Amazing. And also Dr. Sears, I think it's just called like the Baby Sleep book. Those three books really changed me.
So the one I'm going to mention, first of all, just to back up for a moment, not everybody has the same experience that when they sleep with their babies, they sleep really well. And so I'm going to mention this resource. There's a woman on Instagram. I've interviewed her in the past, and she is just a beautiful, exquisite human being. And her website is familysleep.ca. She's Canadian, but she counsels all over the place. But she has tons of free resources on her website. You can also get her as a counselor, but she basically will take a family as a whole and teach them how they can get better sleep, right?
Oh, I listened to that episode that you did. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. She's amazing. The Dr. Sears book was a really profound book for me as well, as were others of his books. But the book that I think was the most formative for me was Sheila Cook Kipley's book called Breastfeeding and Catholic Motherhood. Yes. Have you read it?
Yes, I have. Yep. I've read that. Oh, and I read her book about natural child spacing as well.
Yeah. Breastfeeding and Natural Child Spacing. That's the one. She has another one that she wrote not that long ago called Breastfeeding and Catholic Motherhood. That's also really good. But Breastfeeding and Natural Child Spacing was way more about the mother-child attachment relationship than it is about spacing babies. And it was the book that made me think, okay, co-sleeping and breastfeeding and baby wearing and even when babies wake up at night and child spacing are all one thing. They're not separate things. They're all one thing in this beautiful, incredible design that God has created. And it's just so phenomenal. And her husband, their mantra is that women have a right to know. They teach natural family planning, but they say that women have a right to know that their bodies have a built-in spacing if you respond in the most natural way possible. And they describe what that is, what that means.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with using natural family planning if you want to space babies further, whatever, for whatever your discernment is. But they really make you question how we look at natural family planning, that it's actually built in, but we need to really look at the mother-child relationship and the physical sort of markers that exist in order to space babies further that are a natural part of how we're supposed to be living our lives in a sense, right? And so they're not preachy about it. This is the way you have to live your life. They're just saying, you have a right to know this. And that was a profound statement for me to hear.
Yeah, I never knew
you
that.
Have a right to know. And I thought, okay, and you can make whatever decisions you make in terms of your, you know, how you manage fertility, but that what a beautiful ministry, you know, that teaching women that they have a right to know how their body functions, right? And what are the,
So
really.
That felt very profound for me as well, especially because every single baby after I would go to the doctor at 6 to 8 weeks after. And the first question is, what kind of birth control are you going to be on? First, I'm like, why is it their business? I said, we're Catholic this last time. So, yeah. But I mean.
And did you have opinions about it at that point?
It was the norm to me. Oh, yeah. Totally. Yep. But I wish that I had been educated or read that book or knew that, because I truly just didn't know, had no idea, which it's just really, really interesting. And especially that book, along with James McKenna, the studies that he's done studying babies' heart rates, I believe, when they're in a different room versus with their mother, whether that's in the mother's bed or perhaps in a sidecar crib arrangement or something like that, but just close. The heart rates are just much more constant versus dipping. It's so interesting. And it just, when I was reading this book, I kept reading bits aloud to my husband and he was like, this is so fascinating. Like, why isn't anyone talking about this more?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I think a big part of it, and this is just, I tend to not be very political, but this is a political statement, is that nobody makes money off it.
Right. That's what I kept thinking too. Exactly.
Nobody makes money off natural family planning. Yeah. Nobody makes money off of breastfeeding. It's a real sign of our world, right? The world that we live in.
Absolutely. We're not trying to buy the fancy gadgets or the bassinets that I don't even know, because I never had these things, but they kind of like vibrate, or like the snooze or the little things that you put on your baby's ankle to measure their heart. I don't like, no one, that's expensive. It's free to have your baby close to you and to just nurse on demand, which is something I never did. I never nursed on demand before now, but it's made me so much more in tune with my daughter and her needs. And I don't stress out about sleep. And the sleep is, I mean, you have to, I think, kind of, again, strip away pride and what you think good night's sleep is, because it's just different when you have a baby close to you, because they do nurse more through the night. I mean, she does nurse through the night, but I don't wake up. That's the wonderful thing here. We've learned we kind of synced our sleep. Yeah, we've synced our sleep, and I don't even need to help her latch because she's an older baby. And I think that that comes with having an older baby. I think it is more difficult when you have a newborn. And I remember having Lucy in my bed and also having like the boppy and having to sit up because I couldn't figure out how to sideline nurse without milk going everywhere and her like being so small. But now, once you kind of get over that and you keep practicing sort of, then you, mother and baby sort of find their own comfy spot. Now, the problem which I'm running into is that the baby wants me to go to bed at 8 o'clock at the same time of her because she'll wake up like every 30 minutes until I go to bed. But it's also made me go to bed earlier, which is a really good thing. So I feel like I'm prioritizing my own sleep. If I can go to bed at 9 o'clock and stay in my bed until 6:30 in the morning, I'm nursing. And, you know, there's other children and there's sick kids and there's puppies and there's like, there's other factors. But if I'm making a conscious effort, then, I mean, I find that most nights, I mean, I really don't wake up when she needs to nurse, or I can quickly scoot her down and she latches and we just sleep like that and she'll fall asleep. So it's less stressful. It's less stressful than worrying, is my baby going to sleep through the night? Is my baby going to sleep through the night? Because they're actually not meant to sleep through the night. It's a survival mechanism. Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And that's something I had to kind of wrap my head around because I didn't.
And this is one of Sheila Kipley's points, right? Yeah, it's actually good for you and baby to be waking up. Yeah.
Well, I feel like I was sort of fed a lie that even breastfed babies, it's best for them to be sleeping on their own for 12 hours straight at 3 months. And now looking back, I'm like, that's just a lie to make money. That's not true. If you look at science says that's not true, especially breastfed babies, because breast milk gets digested so quickly versus formula. They're engineered to
know. Exactly. And should we be stressing about how many hours our baby sleeps? Like, I'm going to give you a moment here of full disclosure, just for the sake of my listeners. Once I sort of really embrace this whole idea of attachment, like my first daughter, I nursed till she was 2. And I'm not saying that anybody should nurse to any particular time. You just have to be sensitive to the mother-child relationship. But after that, all of my kids nursed till they were 5.
Right?
That was just what happened. Now, they don't nurse very much after 2, 2.5. You know, they might just nurse at bedtime or whatever. And they all, went off to college and were normal. And they didn't have the, it was just, everything was fine. And I remember bumping into this mom years ago who was also a Lele Chilig leader. And her son, who was like this big strapping, 17 or 18 year old. And we were talking about this. She goes, oh, yeah, I nursed my son till he was 5 as well. And I looked at him and I said, Do you remember? And he goes, yeah. And I thought, oh, that's so cool. My children will remember.
That's so cool.
Fine. And they slept with us like in our bed at least till 4 or 5, and in our room, most of them till they were 6 or 7. And it was at their response. And I'm not saying this is what people should do. What I'm saying is, it was fine, right? We were all fine. Nobody went to college still sleeping in our bed. At some point, everybody said, I really would like to be in my own room. I'd really like to sleep with my brothers. It came from them. It was a normal developmental thing and nobody suffered for it. You know, there was a period in history where it would have been unsafe to have your children, even older children than that, sleep anywhere but in your room because of vermin, because of cold.
Well, I think that was what I was about to say. Those cultures around the world, I mean, we live in a North American rich bubble over here where people have separate rooms for their kids, but most people around the world sleep close to their children.
And we just have a lack of understanding about that. It's nice to sort of look at that and think, okay, people all over the world, even people here, often we're not talking about it, right? But you scratch the surface. If you talk to a mom who's baby wearing or whatever, and she's got a bunch of kids, and more than likely, if you strike up a conversation with her, it'll be like, oh yeah, our kids are in our room till whatever. They just decide when they're, you know, when they're going to move out. We had friends who just developed a family bedroom. They just put mattresses wall to wall just for the sake of getting enough sleep. That was their only goal. And they had kids, maybe the oldest was 7 at the time and the youngest was 2 or a baby or whatever. And a bunch of them for several years just slept all in one big bedroom because it was so much easier.
And those people probably have really good memories of those years.
I would think so, right? That would be, you know, remember when, and remember when I decided I wanted my own room, right? Remember when I was old enough to sort of express that level of independence.
Yeah. And I think that I do have a lot of regret of the way I treated my 3 oldest, not when they were babies, but when they were toddlers and not wanting to sleep in their beds. I mean, that's, I had no idea. Maybe I'm just being silly, but it never dawned on me to bring them into our room because I didn't know anyone who did that with their 3 to 4-year-olds. I thought you need to basically close the door and say, okay, you're in here. Tough love. Like, learn to sleep. And that's what I did. And they did learn to sleep, but I mean, I regret doing that.
Yeah.
So that's a regret of mine. How I handled the situation.
Yeah. And I mean, we have to be gentle with ourselves too, that you only knew what you knew, right?
Exactly. But that's it. I didn't mean anything other, but I'm like, oh my gosh, I would be like, it was so exhausting to keep getting up with a 3-year-old and like keep putting him back in his room over and over and over. Why didn't I just make a bed on the floor in my room? I don't
know. Yeah.
I never thought to do that.
Just for your own sake.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I never thought to do that. And it's almost like, especially like in my experience now over the past 8 months, having another baby, like, and it's been such a gap between my kids, 5 years.
Yeah.
When I quit fighting, like fighting it so much, things just felt so much easier. Like quit fighting. Oh, like, oh, she won't go to sleep. Or so much nursing. I feel like I'm always nursing. Or she just ate. She can't be hungry. Like fighting that urge. When I just really gave into it, said, this is my vocation. This is what God's given me right now. Maybe she's not hungry. She's a breastfed baby. Maybe she needs comfort. Like who am I to deny her that? When I just fully handed myself over to that, everything became easier. And I started feeling way more rested. And
isn't
that
something? Yeah, not stressed about that. Would you say that has it had impact on, because you sort of had this revelation and had this real change and it's such a foundational thing, has it impacted your like style of discipline or your homeschooling or whatever? Or were you already sort of very attachment oriented anyway?
I think that we were attachment oriented before knowing what that meant.
Right.
We've always been very against spanking, for instance. And there's been a lot of points where we were the only ones who didn't spank our kids. That's shocking, but people still do. And so we, you know, it has changed. I think it's made me a gentler parent for sure. More in tune, not just with the baby, but in tune with everybody, because I know the type of family, even if we don't always act like the type of family that I really want, like if we keep going after it, keep responding in a gentle way, keep being there, you know, it's just one small step at a time. And life is chaotic when you have a bunch of young kids and everybody's here. We, you know, homeschool, my husband works from home. We're here together all the time. But instead of like pulling away from that, when you lean into that and like, just this morning, I mean, we've never done morning prayer. We've never made like prayer like a thing with our family because I'm like, oh, my kids are too crazy. We would never be able to do it. And that's always what I've said. But then we went on this retreat and we did a great morning family prayer. And so this morning, you know, we start really small. We just started saying the morning offering. That's it.
Awesome.
Took 30 seconds before breakfast. But it's like that kind of stuff. And we still haven't gotten to the point where we'll say like a family rosary because I can't imagine my kids being around for that. However, we started praying the Angelus at 12 o'clock.
Awesome.
So like little things to keep moving forward. And I feel like being open to that and being more gentle is benefiting that as well.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, just baby steps, right? God doesn't expect more than that from us, right?
It is. I always had like kind of an all or nothing mindset. Right. If we don't do this, then, you know, it's the hell in a handbag. Yeah, like it just, whatever. Yeah. Let's not even try.
Yeah.
Like if I can't work out every day, I'm not even going to do it. Right. If I can't do a whole rosary with my family every night, I'm never even going to try to do one prayer.
Right.
But, you know, I feel like God calls us to just make small sacrifices and small little steps every single day. And they really do add up.
Yeah. Oh, they really do. I mean, I can't believe, I was just telling my youngest daughter, actually, we were talking yesterday about sort of Catholic family traditions and whatnot. And I remember as a new Catholic, I had a couple little kids, and I remember sort of reading about other Catholic families and things that they do and all of that, and being completely overwhelmed by the idea of learning about the saints and the idea of all the different devotions available to me and all the many, many things that we could do. I sort of got this sense that I was supposed to be doing all of them or a whole bunch of them in order to be a good Catholic. And I thought, you know what? I can't do that right now. But slowly it just came, you know, we would learn about one saint and then kind of own that. And then, you know, eventually learn about another saint. And I just had to be gentle with myself as a convert with little kids, not thinking that I have to be like that person who's been Catholic their whole life and have all this knowledge and understanding and devotion and all of that. Just one baby step at a time.
Right. And it's hard now, especially with social media, because we only see the best of everybody. Yeah. And it seems like everybody is doing all the things. I mean, for instance, on Christmas Eve this year, I just wanted so badly to go to like a midnight mass.
Yeah.
My kids aren't ready for a midnight mass. Like, can't even, like, we have a hard time sitting through a normal mass in the morning. So we didn't make it to the midnight mass. Like, we went to mass on Christmas Day instead, and it was fine. But it's just, you know, not getting too attached to one idea.
Yeah, it has to work for your family, right? And I love that the church has so much room for that too, right?
Oh,
you can do midnight mass. You can do a Christmas Eve mass. You can do a morning mass. You know, all of it. But so much and so many devotions to choose from and so many little ways that we can move forward in our faith. And the church just is so well equipped to take people wherever they're at and move them forward at whatever pace. You know, for the person who's on fire, they can be reading the church fathers. They can be, you know, a single guy who's this. He can just do what he could delve into it as deeply as he wanted to. Or, you know, for the mom with the little kids, just one little thing at a time, right? It's so beautiful.
And I mean, it's especially since co-sleeping, I've sort of had to die to myself just a little bit because my favorite, I'm a morning person and I have always, through the past 10 years, gotten up very early before the rest of my family, get to sit down, have my coffee, have a morning time, do some like reading and stuff like that. And I can't do that right now in this season. Mm-hmm. If I leave the bed, Lucy's going to wake up and the puppy's going to get away. It's just like, I can't do that. And that's been hard. But what I can do is every time I nurse or a couple times doing the liturgy of the hours or saying, like, you know, praying a Hail Mary or something. It's just something like that. It's not the same, but, you know, I think that you have to be okay with different things in different seasons.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I was going to ask you about sort of the Catholic versus Protestant theology. Like, I've always felt that at some level, and it's something at some point in my life, I'd love to explore this deeper. But do you think that theologically, that's why all the Catholic friends do this way, and that's why all the Protestant friends do this way? Now, I know there's a big divide there, but there's definitely Protestants who are attachment parenting, gentle parenting, and there are Catholics who are more rigid, I guess. But I would say that there's a pretty significant divide between the Catholics that I know and the Protestants that I know and how they parent.
I mean, I know I'm going to step on people's toes, but there's just really no way around it to have a candid conversation about it. But most of the Protestants that I knew all spanked their kids. I don't know. I think that a lot of it goes back to some theology stuff. I don't believe that children are inherently sinners or bad or anything. Like, we are all good. We're all like the dignity of the person, you know, that to really tap into their own dignity, we have to be gentle with them. They're people too. We're not lording over them.
Yeah, they're not born sinners who are covered by grace. They are born with inherent dignity,
yes,
and they have concupiscence just like the rest of us, right?
So, I mean, I think that, like you said, there's for sure, there's mm-hmm. Protestants who are more attachment based and there's Catholics who are more rigid, but that's definitely what I have found. And that's been a huge, it just like really stuck out to me actually. And I still don't really know the answer to it, but it's just, it seems almost funny to me, the whole, we have to give our kids so much grace, so much grace, so much grace, but we also need to really correct them, stand over them and give them a little spanking when they've been naughty.
My daughter, she was a challenging kid. I only had Protestant friends at the time because we were the only Catholics homeschooling in our area. And so we got together with other Protestants, and I had one Protestant family in particular kind of really hammer me, you've got to spank that kid. You got to spank that kid. And I did not believe in spanking. I've never spanked my first daughter, you know, but spanking is the right way to handle this. At some point, I felt like, okay, this woman had several kids and they were older than my kids and they all seemed well-behaved. And, you know, I mean, scratching the surface, we found out more information later on. But the reality was that I thought, at some point, I kind of weakened and I thought, maybe she's right. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just totally messing up. We spanked her 2 times. And it was like, first of all, it felt sick. I just was sick about it, right?
Right.
And I mean, it wasn't like I hauled off and, you know, wailed on her or anything like that. But it was like, why? And she just became more aggressive.
Right.
Right? And it was like, okay, this isn't working. Of course you have a kid who tends to be aggressive. You're going to hit them. They're going to be more aggressive.
Yeah.
Hello?
Well, yeah.
You know?
When you really think about it, yeah, of course. I mean, it makes me really sad, actually, that they're out there, and I'm not going to say any names, but there's a big homeschooling kind of, I'm going to call her like a guru. She's probably your age. She's homeschooled her one child, so she must have tons of experience, one child. But she said, I listened to her lectures and she said, you should start your day up with your 3-year-old, giving them a little spanking first thing in the morning so they know who's boss. And if they come out of their room during quiet time, it's immediate spanking.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even listen anymore after that. I was like, this just seems so wrong. And she's still saying this stuff. People are still buying into this.
Yeah.
I mean, I have challenging kids as well, and I can't imagine spanking my challenging child because that would just really make him more challenging. Because what they want is
more time. Yeah, I mean, we have to find other ways. It's really quite something. But it convinced me even more that it was wrong by sort of trying. And I look back on one of that sort of, as even though it was so short, but it was just seemed like a very dark time. Because I weakened so much, but I just felt like I was such a failure and I knew I was being judged and that judgment of others. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to let people do that to me anymore. I'm not going to let people's judgment affect my choices.
Exactly. I think that it was a whole kind of movement, maybe in the early 90s with some Protestant, pastors or something who kind of took the rod quote.
The rod versus spare the rod, spoil the
child. Yeah, hitting your kid with like a spoon or something. Yeah. But I feel like it was very kind of early 90s when people started doing that and taking mm-hmm. that really seriously. And I think there's been several parenting books written, and I feel like the last name is Tripp, but I'm not sure. There's been a few parenting books with the words grace in it, which really would say that you do need to spank your kids, use corporal punishment in order to get them to respect you, to do the right thing. And I think that there's a lot of people who believe that because they don't know anything else. They don't know any other way.
Yeah. And I think sort of immersing ourselves in the ideas, Pope John Paul's ideas of the theology of the body, even though we think of that as being more about intimacy and about marital relationships, really it does go beyond that. The theology goes about our own bodies, but also the bodies of others and the inherent dignity. And so Pope John Paul's pithy, and most people with small kids are probably not reading him, but he just has such beautiful things to say. And even just reading the sections, the small sections in the catechism on the theology of the body are really, I don't know, they were really, really helpful to me to sort of understand why this isn't dignified. Why not just hitting, but punishment in general, just being something that, okay, let's take a look at this. Do we actually need to punish, or do we need to talk? Do we need to manage differently? And there are lots of different ways of doing that, which, you know, I've talked about that in many, many episodes. You know, what do we do instead of punishing? Is punishing a dignified thing? Or to me, it's very contractual, right? And we don't want contractual relationships. We want covenantal relationships.
Yeah. My husband and I talk a lot about that because our oldest is going to be 10. And I was like, gosh, he's going to be a teenager soon. I mean, we want him to want to hang out with us, to have great conversations and all the things. And right now he's in a stage where he wants to hang out with us all the time. He wants to sit with us and talk at night, and he wants to just, said, he was like, oh, you have to go do your podcast. I was just really hoping like we could spend time together. And I want to be like, we just did. I did math with you all morning, but
what a beautiful thing though, right?
Because he was my most challenging kid, and he's turning into the one who really wants to spend time with us. And he just loves like being with us. And I have to preserve that as he goes into his teen years. Mm-hmm. I don't want to drive that away.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's such a great foundation. It sounds beautiful because that was so meaningful to us. And any Catholic homeschooling parents who've raised kids and they're adults now and all of that will say, like, really the teen years, when your kids want to sit and talk at night, just absolutely, you know, let them encourage that, because they could be doing a lot of other stuff that you might not want them to be doing. And the fact that they want to spend time with you is beautiful.
Yeah.
We had a once a week where we had a date night, my husband and I, and we would just say, okay, on date night, you guys need to just go off to bed early. And the kids were fine. They wanted us to have date nights. It wasn't like, I mean, they might.
But you didn't actually, did you go somewhere?
No, we would just stay home and eat dessert and watch a movie or something. Have a glass of wine
or
whatever.
That's great to know. When I get off this, I'm going to tell my husband about that, because we're still trying to figure out like date nights, spending time together, all the things. Because it just seems like right now things are so busy with four young kids and a puppy. And like, I don't know. It's really hard. And by the end of the day, I'm so tired. And we do sit on the couch and talk at night, but there's my 9-year-old who wants to hang out with us.
You know,
so we're all together.
It was really for us. I'll sort of share how that happened, because it might be helpful for you, but also other listeners, that when our kids got older and they wanted to start hanging out with us, we valued that and we felt it was important. And we had discussed it like, should we be letting them stay up, and at what point? And then another one would sort of get a little older and say, can I stay up tonight too? And so it happened very organically, but we also felt like we needed some time to talk, and we rarely went out. Maybe, you know, once a year we'd go out for dinner when we had little kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, hardly ever.
Right.
Partly because we're too tired and it was expensive and we'd have to get a babysitter. And it was just like, okay, let's just have date night at home. Yeah. We just picked a night that was convenient where nothing else was going on. And we'd see, okay, guys, it's date night. And Albert would go, if I was out that day, one of us would bring home, we would call it, can you pick up a date? Right. And so it was usually some sort of fancy dessert, right? We'd get our dessert or a bottle of wine, and we would just sit and talk and maybe stay up a little later than we might normally. But it was so important. It was so important, right, to have that one night, and good for our kids to see, right?
That's really, really good. Yeah, even if you don't actually go out, because, I mean, who actually really does? Once you have
it's just too much work.
Three kids, who really does? My husband wishes that we did a weekly date night, and that's just not in the cards for us right now. It would be so expensive. I would be stressed out the whole time about the kids at home. And what am I mean, I could bring the baby, but I don't really want to, but you know, so that's a really, really good idea. And I love, you know, saying that. And if you spend time with your kids at other points, you know, they would respect that. I mean, I think Adam and I just had that conversation the other day, because I was so tired and the other kids were going with him to run an errand, and my oldest stayed home, and he goes, oh, good. It's just us now. I thought that we could stay home together and we could just cook. And he was like, oh my gosh. Like, I was really hoping to just sit and read my book for a second or like catch up on my emails. Like, I don't really want to do that. But then I was like, gosh, he's going to be a teenager in a couple of years. And I hope that he still wants to bake with me. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, buddy, let's get out your new baking book that you got from Santa. And let's pick something together. And so we made cupcakes and it was great. Yeah. And I like, that was like a great moment. And he was so, so happy to just do that together. So I feel like it's more of that. And then also being like, well, no, we did that together. So now your dad and I are going to have time together too.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I do think they just really, really appreciate seeing their parents want to spend time together. Right. That's meaningful.
Absolutely. It's so important for them.
I wanted to make a couple of comments that sort of might harken back to some things that we were talking about earlier. But one of the things that I found about attachment, which people probably have picked up from this podcast and other ones I've done as well, is it was just easier. Discipline was easier. I didn't have to think about what stick I was going to mete out or what prize I was going to mete out for particular behaviors or particular things kids were doing right or wrong or whatever. I didn't have to think about that. The discipline wasn't like that. And breastfeeding just was easy. And even on our date nights, like sometimes I had a sleeping baby. Lots of times I had a sleeping baby on date nights. I couldn't do that if we went out, but it was just streamlined. So the baby's sleeping and, you know, nursing in their sleep or whatever, or sitting on my lap because they are going to wake up every 20 minutes if I go lay them down. So that's, you know, that would be frustrating. So yeah, my husband, it was his idea. Like, why don't you just hold on your lap till we're ready to go to bed? It's like, oh, okay.
That's the smart. Yeah, it's like easy stuff like that. You're like, oh, yeah, okay.
That idea of just streamlining your life is important. And that was a big motivator for me on how all of this was just like, wow, this is so much simpler than thinking about all these things that I could potentially be thinking about or all the ways I might have to live my life as opposed to doing this. And this is very, it might seem off topic, but I don't think it is. So as you're approaching 40, it occurred to me, I should mention this, that anecdotally, women who have babies later in life, and as you're approaching 40, this will be on your mind. Like, you know, people are start doing baby math in their late 30s. Like, I wonder how many more babies I'll have, right? And, you know, how many could I potentially end up with? Because I know people, I had my last baby, I was almost 43. And then, I've known people as old as 48, right? Have a baby. And, you know, it was a surprise for sure.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. But it happens.
Yeah. Same. Now that I'm Catholic, I know. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So we have to sort of letting go of that too. And sort of there was these years, first of all, these years of not knowing for sure. Well, like after I had my last baby and until I actually menopause was finished, there was these years where I didn't know. And part of it was kind of bittersweet, like thinking, okay, we're onto a new phase of life, but I couldn't let go of it yet because I didn't know. So I had 3 or 4 years that, you know, I could have another baby, but I might not have another baby. Yeah. So what do I do? And living with that uncertainty is actually really good for us, right?
It is really good for us. And it makes us more type B than type A.
Exactly. And lean into to what God has in store. But it feels a little bit, again, like being a teenager because you don't know the path of your life. When you're raising kids, you know the path of your life, right?
Yeah.
And then things start to change.
If you cut it off and have your husband get a vasectomy, you know the path of your life.
Exactly.
I mean, you're making the call versus God making the call.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a beautiful place to say that, like, certain people should have like 10 kids if they're you know, you might not.
No time for midlife crisis, let me tell you.
I mean, I think that that's just like some discernment that both husband and wife have to have together.
Yeah.
If they think that they should have more kids or not.
Yeah.
But to be the, like, shut it off feels different than having a conversation about it.
Yeah. And is that giving your life to God? And there might be very good reasons that you have to not have more children, right? But giving it to God, right?
Yeah.
God has to be part of that conversation. But the other sort of end of that, the anecdotal part was, anecdotally, women who have babies later in life, menopause is very easy, right? And certainly it was for me and anybody that I've talked to, which is a small sample size, maybe half a dozen women, 10 women that had babies later in life had easy menopause. Like for me, it was literally just like, oh, I don't get periods anymore. Oh, okay.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't heard that.
And I mean, my mother had, when menopause was just brutal for her, it was just brutal. Years and years of symptoms and struggling and all of that. She was done having kids at 24.
Wow.
Again, small sample size, but anecdotally, that's, I would actually love any of my listeners who have older kids and you know, are negotiating the menopause thing. How is that for you? I'd love to hear that from people because.
I would love to know that too, because I hadn't heard that. I'm actually going to ask my, I've been working with an integrative Catholic women's health coach this year, once a month. And she is like a specialty person on that sort of thing. And what's called FEM.
Okay.
Are you familiar with FEM, which is female? It's not natural family planning, but it really, basically you take your ovulatory cycle and see what you can tell about your overall health from
Interesting.
That. There's an app and there's a website and she's like a FEM specialist.
Okay. Interesting.
So you track, you look at all of the factors, you look at ovulation, delayed ovulation, all the things. And basically what can that tell you about your overall health?
Interesting. Okay.
So I'm going to ask her because she's a specialty. She's a specialist.
Yeah. How has that sort of played out for people in premenopausally and all of that?
Yeah.
Well, we should probably wrap up there. Was there anything more that you wanted to leave my listeners with? Is there some wisdom or piece of advice or thought that you would like to provoke?
Well, I honestly wish that I had listened to a podcast like this when I had only one baby. because I had never knew some things. And I would get so stressed out over baby sleeping. And I mean, the bottom line is they will sleep eventually. Yeah. They will sleep through the night eventually. You're not always going to be so tired for the rest of your life. I mean, it feels like yesterday that my 9-year-old who had colic, who was so difficult, and I would just walk him in circles in the stroller in the yard, like glass of wine, walking around, like trying to get him to calm down. And I thought that he would never sleep. I don't know. I was so stressed out. And when I stopped being so stressed out over that and just like accept that this is your vocation and nighttime parenting is really just it's the same. You can't just cut off nighttime parenting and say, I'm only going to parent from 7 to 5 and then they're on their own.
Yeah.
That's not really holistic. So I just wish that I had that advice 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because I've seen both sides of it and things are a lot better when I just released it to God and when it stops going against his design for mothers and babies, which is to be together because at the end of the day, we're mammals. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mammals like are together. They're with their young all the time.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that, Jenna, the very fact that you have had both experiences, I think means a lot to listeners because, and people out there when you share your story, and I'm so grateful that you are because I think sometimes people can think, well, no, this is the family we are. This is what we do. So even if that idea comes across their path.
I mean, I thought that too.
They might think that, but also they can think, well, how can I change now? But also to hear that, okay, somebody, because sometimes we just get this little inkling of a feeling, you know, maybe this isn't the way, you know, maybe I'm struggling with this and maybe I need to do things differently. And to hear somebody who's walked the path of changing how they do things, I think really, really matters. It's very humble. It's a beautiful story.
God's definitely brought me to a humble spot. And to the mom who has the baby who feels like they're never going to sleep, I would say, sleep with the baby. And to the mom who has the 3-year-old who won't stay in their bed, I would say, make a little bed in your bedroom. That's my big advice. You know?
I don't know. So simple. So simple, right?
It's very simple. And guess what? It's free.
Exactly.
It is free. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me again. This was just fantastic and sharing your story. And share it far and wide, I would say.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Molly. It was such a fun conversation. I'm glad we got to reconnect.
Oh, God bless you. Have a wonderful day.
All right. Take care. Thank you. Bye.